Gail Toussaint has racked up a full 34 successful years on the bench. She is in her fifth term with the Superior Court of Fulton County. She is also a National Judicial College faculty member and serves as an adjunct Emory Law School faculty member. In 2009, the Georgia Association of Black Women Attorneys presented Toussaint with the Leah Ward Sears Distinction in Profession Legacy Award. She is also a past recipient of the MLK Center for Nonviolent Social Changes Peace and Justice Award, a member of the YWCA of Greater Atlanta's Academy of Women Achievers, and a charter inductee into her alma mater, John Muir High School's Hall of Fame. "It's very gratifying to know your public service is recognized as being worthwhile," she once said. She has served as the chair of the judicial sections of the Gate City Bar Association, the Atlanta Bar Association, president of the Atlanta Legal Aid Society, Campfire USA, Georgia Council, vice president of the Legal Clinic for the Homeless, and chair of the Georgia Supreme Court's Commission on Continuing Lawyer Competency, among others. When not presiding over the bench, Toussaint is writing about it.
Hey, Randy. It's good to be in your presence once again. We all know that you're a very high-profile, very accomplished divorce lawyer in the Atlanta area and across the country, quite frankly. And some of your cases have involved celebrities such as Nene Leakes, Neo, T-Pain, Dominique Wilkins, Michael Jordan, Evander Holyfield, Ludacris, Usher, and Andre Rison.
All right.
But this is what I've always wanted to ask you as a judge, because sometimes the celebrity and the high maintenance nature of the clients in the cases, that can make the court process a little more challenging as well. You know, we may go longer, we may start late because they haven't shown up, or there just may be some issues that they're not ready to resolve. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about how you, as the attorney, perhaps say or need to say no to your clients, and how do you give them some good advice and reality checks?
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, and it's an honor to be in your presence, Your Honor, the Chief Judge of Fulton County and the Chief of the Family Court in the past. So, first of all, you named some names. Most of the cases never get out there because we're able to resolve them because of all the things you said. Getting into the courthouse with a famous person is always complicated. It always creates a stir. You know, I've had cases where somebody I was walking across the street with and everyone recognized him, and he was married to somebody famous, and he was famous. And finally we got to the clerk's office, and I'll never forget, and the clerk looked at me and said, "How are you, Mr. Kessler?" And I was feeling good that somebody knew me finally, and then the clerk looked up and said, "What's up, Mac?" they knew him too. So, you know, but it causes problems in back entrances. There aren't really a lot of, you know, special ways to get in and out of the courthouse, and especially if both sides are famous. So famous people are usually smart enough to try to keep it out of court and resolve it themselves and not be there. But there are occasions where either the famous person or their spouse or significant other doesn't let it get settled because they want their 2 minutes in the courtroom or their pound of flesh or whatever it is. And so sometimes you ask me the question, how do you just say no to the client? Sometimes it's just say yes. Sometimes you have to give in more because the financial pain of giving a little bit more money sometimes is worth it to avoid the public pain and the public persona image and the hit that it might take to their reputation to have to go to court. So it's a whole other world when you're representing people that have one public persona and don't want the world to know so much about their private persona. It's a hard situation.
So we're going to dig a little deeper, but something that you said made me think about this Rule 22 business. Mm. So for the public, whenever there is a desire by the press to cover the court proceedings typically are considered to be public. We have something called the Constitution and the First Amendment. But there is a desire to put everything probably on camera as opposed to coming and sitting and making notes as a reporter in the back bench. So what do your clients typically – do you have instructions about whether you're supposed to just automatically object if there is a request from a major network to have a camera?
Well, maybe you can answer this for me. I tell them that when a judge gets a request for that, the judge knows that if the judge doesn't allow the cameras in, then they're going to alienate all of society and the people that elected him or her, because that's, you know, part of the public's right to know. And this, so I explained to them, number one, how let's try everything we can to do that we can do to keep it out of court. But yes, sometimes they want me to object. Although I've had times when I've reached out to the other side and we've reached a consent agreement to not have it public, to keep the file sealed. And there are judges who won't agree to that, even though both sides and both lawyers have agreed to that. So I think as soon as a client, famous or not, steps into the litigation arena and files a lawsuit or defends a lawsuit, all bets are off as to what could happen. They've got to be on their best behavior. I really don't know what to tell them except that expect that there will be cameras, expect that somebody will see you, expect that somebody will hear about this, and then we do everything we can to avoid that. We have filed in different counties. We have withdrawn cases, dismissed them, and worked it out privately, and then submit a final agreement that's very bare bones. They're just you got to be creative in these situations.
So what do you do when I think on another segment, you might recall, we were talking about ADR mediations.
Right.
But let's just say this client just refuses to enter into an agreement. They want their day in court. They want to glare at the other side across the courtroom, point a finger, use a few bits of profanity, mm-hmm. you know, show out, let's mm-hmm. just say. How do you prepare the client for how to act in court?
Boy, well, number one, I would try to get a judge like Your Honor to do it privately if there's private judging or settlement conferences where they can actually do
now,
that.
Now, wait. I'm not doing any private. What do you mean, private?
I mean, like one day. You
know, you're like, making it sound like I'm holding court outside of the courthouse.
No, but traditionally hosted settlement conferences.
Okay, got it. All right.
You know, where sometimes judges will send a case to another judge that's not involved to handle the case for them. Or sometimes judges that used to be judges turn out to be private mediators so that they could get their mediation in with someone who actually is a judge, wore a robe, and has that authority. But if it's going to be in court, you know, we got to think of everything. And I once told a football player, I said, you got to dress your very best. And I swear to you, Judge, he came in jeans that looked like they were torn up. I'm sure they were $300 jeans. Unlaced tennis shoes. I'm sure there were hundreds of dollars of tennis shoes. A baseball cap on backwards, and a wife beater, you know, the white undershirt.
Right.
And I said, what are you doing?
Showing the shoulders.
Yeah. I said, what are you doing? He said, that's my best outfit. That was my most expensive outfit. So
did you send him home?
It was too late. It was too late. I mean, we got a decent result. It was a colleague of Your Honor's. But I've learned you tell them dress like you dress to go to church, and then I've learned sometimes people don't dress up to go to church. It depends on the church.
Well, so. Now we have to share the story about our friend tuxedo, right?
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness.
He was not a celebrity before the case. He was afterwards as a result of what he wore.
We had a jury trial. I'll never forget. And for 5 days, he represented himself, and he wore a tuxedo every day. And only when the case was over, Your Honor kept well composed the whole time. At the end of the case, Your Honor had to ask him, so I just got to ask, why were you wearing a tuxedo? And do you want to give the punchline or should I?
You do.
He said, well, Your Honor, I figured I got married in it. I might as well get divorced in it.
Yeah, we laughed about that for a while. I hope they're both doing well.
I've not heard back from either, so that's a good sign.
But in terms of reality checks, maybe we really need to talk a little bit about reality TV. So everyone has this impression of what court is supposed to be like, you know, how the judge is supposed to sound, how the judge is, you know, basically screaming at everybody and putting everyone in their place. But I think it also affects, at least from my perspective, how litigants come in. The whole sense of this being a solemn, professional environment is just lost on folks. I mean, how do you?
I'll tell you. Not every state allows this, but Georgia and many states let the public go into a courtroom when a trial is going on. And I recommend to every client, go see a case, and I can promise them, and I can promise anyone listening, you go to listen to a case, and you'll hear the case, and you will think that the result is for sure going to be one thing. And when you hear the judge open his or her mouth and rule, you won't believe it. Just like when a jury hears a case, and they start to deliberate after a week of listening to it, all 12 of them, it's like they heard 12 different cases. So that should scare the pants off of some people when they think, I thought my case was right. You know, it's easy to come to my office and tell me what their case is about and for me to make them feel confident until they're confronted with the complete opposite story from the other side, well presented by a good lawyer. that also makes sense, you know. So you got to prepare them for the worst, and you got to scare them, and you got to lower their expectations, because everyone thinks they're right and everyone sees things through their own prism, and Your Honor sees both sides. And I'd like to ask you a question. How many times have you heard a lawyer present a case and give their opening or the plaintiff's case and thought that you knew what you were going to do until you heard the other side of the story?
Well, lots of times. Yeah. I mean, you were supposed to keep an open mind, and there have definitely been instances where I thought I was going to rule one way. I listened to the evidence. There have been cases where I thought at the end of the trial, having heard the evidence, I knew how I was going to rule, listened to the closings, mm-hmm. and then changed my mind. So anything can impact the trier of fact, the judge, in making a decision. Let me ask you this question. So sometimes the judge, I will call people into chambers. I'll, you know, let everyone know what's going on. But just to kind of have a heart-to-heart with mm-hmm. the lawyers without their wonderful clients.
Absolutely.
And I may share something with you that your client really needs to hear but maybe doesn't want to hear. How do you break the news to the client, or how do you kind of pull them down a notch or two from their opinion of themselves when you realize that that may not be the court's impression of them?
Well, hopefully I've done a good job and I've told them what to expect, and they didn't want to hear it from me, or they didn't believe it and they think the judge is going to see it differently. And when I say, you know, I gave it my best and the judge still doesn't believe that you should get this or do that, that makes it easier if I've done it the right way. If I've not been able to do that and the client has these false expectations, I explain it and I say that she's a great judge and she will listen to your case and maybe we will convince her otherwise. But if we don't convince her otherwise, then you've spent 2 or 3 hours of the court's time knowing what the outcome was probably going to be. And sometimes people just want their fair shot. They just want it to be heard. And if I can tell them and convince them that I've told it to you, and I know you're a good judge, you've done this before. You've come out and said, I want you to know, Mr. Kessler explained this to me, and Mr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so explained that to me, and I understand both the positions. But here's how I feel about it. Then the clients have been heard, and I think that's 90% of the battles. At least they got to tell you what they feel, and if you don't agree with them, that's your prerogative. But if I don't at least make the argument, that, you know, I need them to know that I made the argument, that I made the presentation, and sometimes that does get cases solved very quickly.
I hope we have some people listening, some younger lawyers who are still learning the trade, who certainly have a lot to learn from someone such as yourself, by reputation, you've written books. There's lots of good information out there. What would your advice be to them if they just have kind of a gut uneasiness about taking on a particular case? Should they take the case? I mean, they're trying to pay rent. They have a young child at home. I mean, they have all these competing factors.
Oh, my gosh. It's that old, you know, it's like the campaign on drugs, just say no. And there's nothing more true than just say no. And I've learned, a lot of lawyers told me, and I was lucky to have a lot of mentors and older lawyers help me, you never lose money on the cases you turn down. Now, granted, I've got an ego. And a lot of good lawyers have egos, and I think that's a problem client, but I can straighten him or her out. I can make them accept a real fair proposition, and sometimes I can. Sometimes I know the kids will be better off shared time, and my client doesn't want that, and I say, let's get some experts and see what the results should be. But sometimes it's okay to say no, and it's easy to sit here on this great podcast when I've got a great practice, and I can say no to a client, and I'll have another client come in. But if I was a young lawyer and I needed the business, and someone came in with a few $1,000 to pay me, and I needed to feed my family and pay the rent, it's hard to say no. But I promise those of you listening out there, another case will come, and the cases that you get that gut feeling not to take, they'll eat away at you. They'll take your time. They'll file a bar complaint. They'll not pay when the retainer runs out. It's not worth it. Spend the time going out and meeting people that will send you other business. Don't spend the time working for somebody that your gut reaction says, please escort them out the office. I mean, just act on your instincts. That's what made you a good lawyer. It's what's going to keep you as a good lawyer, and it is okay to say no to a client.
Now, do you know it's really hard for the court? It's a motion to withdraw. Mm. The case has been underway for some time. The case maybe even has scheduled, you know, for a final or a dispositive, very important proceeding. And then I get a motion from the lawyer to withdraw. Most courts, most states probably have rules like ours where, you know, you have to show that the client has been given notice. The client may or may not be consenting. But in the case where the client is not consenting and is saying, I have paid Randy Kessler a whole lot of money, and now he doesn't want to be my lawyer, but you come in and say, you know, we have basically irreconcilable differences as attorney and client. I got to get out of this case, Judge. You can't force me to represent. I mean,
that's a really hard issue because lawyers are stuck having to abide by the attorney-client privilege. And if my client came in and told me that, so I don't want to make anything up because somebody might know who I'm talking about. But if they told me to say things that aren't true, or if they told me they're going to lie on the witness stand, or if they've told me that they have a bank account that's hidden that the other side doesn't know about and they don't want to disclose it, and I can't see myself ethically going forward, I can't say, Judge, let me out because my client is unethical. I just have to hope that Your Honor lets me out. And it's a hard position, and I understand the court's position, which is why if I'm going to withdraw from a case, I should try to do it well in advance so that they can get somebody else, or if the case won't be prejudiced by continuance so they can get another lawyer. And I understand from the judge's point of view, it's a lot easier to have a lawyer you know represent the person than have somebody trying to learn the rules that's never been a lawyer. It's one of those dilemmas where you try your best to get your client's consent or get them to hire another lawyer, and sometimes you just have to try a case that you don't want to try.
I confess that I probably, because again, we don't really get the reasons.
Right.
So I probably am thinking it's more about money than some ethical issues. So, I mean, is it unreasonable for me? I'm asking you. This is your chance now to tell the judge what to do.
Yes.
Is it unreasonable for me to push back? I mean, to kind of force you to work out the problem with your lawyer so that you stay in the case?
I think, you know, if it's a lawyer that's got a good reputation that you know is not just one who takes a $200 retainer and then charges $10,000 and says, oh, that client can't pay me, let me get out of the case, that's not fair. But I think if a lawyer files a motion to withdraw, they've got a real good reason to. And I'll tell you, in our position, if it's about money, we don't file a motion to withdraw when someone owes us a few thousand dollars. It's when they've owed us thousands and we've pushed them and we've asked them, and when we think they have the ability to pay it or to borrow it or to get it. You know, the client that says, I have the money in the bank, but I'm just not paying you, or they're going to pay for a new Ferrari, but they're not going to pay for us. That's troubling. But, you know, if I get into a case where the client doesn't have the money and I hope that she gets some marital money to pay us with, or that the court awards attorney's fees, then that's on me, you know. On the other hand, you can remedy that by awarding attorney's fees.
Oh, well, there's another topic. We could talk about that for another 20 minutes. But for now, I think we're kind of at time. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting about the clients, the good, the bad, the ugly, and all of that.
It's been a pleasure.
And that brings us to a close of our show, Attorney at Law Magazine, Behind the Case with Judge Gail Toussaint. Thank you.